I would suggest you've just got to love it. It's got to be the thing that gets you out of bed in the morning. And if it doesn't, that's okay. You don't have to do it. But if it gets you, if that's what wakes you up and gets you moving, then that's what you're meant to be doing, and go and do it. If you can get help in the process, do it.
Good. Welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
We want to debate, investigate, and entertain.
Join us as we challenge the human experience
by speaking to people who impact the world through art.
Chapter 2, Podcast 5, Sally McLean.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
We would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present, on which this podcast recording today takes place.
Yes, and welcome to another podcast. It's a very special month.
It is a special month.
Lauren, isn't it? Why is it so special?
Did you know?
Yes.
November is the 11th month, right?
Yes.
And the penultimate month of the year. We looked this up for listeners. We wanted to know what was special about November, and I have discovered, I've figured it out. It is the penultimate month of the year in the Julian and Gregorian calendars.
For those of you that follow those calendars.
And
yes,
the fourth and last month to have the length of 30 days. Thank you, Wikipedia. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Wikipedia. And don't say you don't learn anything on this show, because
it is a learning show.
It is, or a podcast, whatever it might
be.
It's
a learning podcast.
You're learning. Well, there you go. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome.
It's exciting to be with you for another month, especially if you're enjoying the penultimate month of the Gregorian calendar.
Lauren, if your name is Greg or Julian.
Correct.
And now, you've got a calendar.
Let's get this show on the road, eh? I want to hear about your month, first of all.
In the spotlight.
In the spotlight. Lauren Bailey, tell us about your month.
Well, I think I was going to be inspired by you telling me about your month. No, okay. That's not true. I did notice you put a little reminder in our podcast notes for tonight to indicate what our topic is.
Oh, yeah, so yeah, yeah.
I have nominated the topic.
Okay, talk to
me. My topic for the month is balls in the air.
Balls in the air. Okay, tell us more. Explain to us what you mean by that.
Right, okay, in all seriousness, I sat down to reflect on this month and found that because there's been a lot going on this month, it's required me to just be really present on any particular day with the particular task of the day.
I understand, yeah.
There's been some great stuff happening. I had the trip to LA, which we talked about when I was over there last time, and straight back into rehearsals, which was a short and intense period for the production of Cuckoo, of course, by 15 Minutes from Anywhere. And I did a little bit of voiceover this month. Mm-hmm. I've been interviewed for the film.
Yeah, you have been busy. And so what you're sort of saying there is you've been forced to be present. So the reflection stage where, you know, if you're anything like me, you can get caught up in all that reflection sometimes. And now to be just doing, it's a really...
And I didn't even realise that until I was like, okay, cool, what am I going to say about my month? What have I been doing this month? And I'm like, oh, I think I've been in the middle of doing whatever needs to be doing, and obviously really enjoying a whole heap of it.
And that's a really healthy place to be mentally as well, isn't it? When you're just doing being. Does it not feel like that?
Yeah, things are definitely very positive. And it's interesting, a bit of a holdover from last month's podcast and talking about the stuff that really resonated with me from Ali's interview about doing what you want. Yes. I had a conversation with Anne Chung around that time as well, who's a previous podcast guest. And she was talking about this idea that we choose to do everything that we do. And because you choose to do everything that you do, it means that you want to do everything you do. So I've thought about that quite a few times this month and just thought, I wanted this because this is what I chose to do. Mm. And so now that I'm in it, it's like, okay, well, I want this. What's happening with it? And it's just helped me to balance out.
Yeah, regain power with your life too, in a way.
So I think it's been a good month. Tell me about regaining power in your month.
Well, do you know what? It's funny. And I think that my beautiful wife, Roxy, was telling me that there has been a shift astrologically. Is that the right terminology?
You said astrologically correctly, but I'm not sure about terminology.
Well, I think the listeners get what I'm trying to say. I don't know much about astrology. However, there has been a shift. So for me, this month has been really a transitionary month as well. So things have started to kick off a little bit more energetically. I know I've spoken in previous months about just feeling like I'm in preparation mode with a lot of the things that I was doing. I've been able to... A little bit of work has popped up, so I'm actually coming down to Melbourne in a couple of weeks to do
some MCing. You to stay away. I said... Go back to Sydney, Nick.
Yeah. I know. Off I can't get away from Melbourne, right? I'm doing some stuff for the Commonwealth Games, the MCing for Disney, as well as I went and got some new headshots with...
Oh, fantastic.
...the wonderful Luke Stambula, who is up in Sydney. He's a wonderful person to do your headshots with, actually. He really makes you feel comfortable, which is number one, but also he speaks our language, which is so important for when you're doing headshots to be able to get
absolutely
a range of different things. But one thing I did want to talk about...
And by that, does he come from a performance background? Is that what
you mean? No. He's just a just wonderful wordsmith and he gets it. So that was a really lovely experience and I think it'll be some headshots that are a little different for me. But one thing I did want to chat to you about, Lauren, is something that I went to a couple of weeks ago, which a friend of mine brought me along to. And it was the event called Man Up, which was at the Beresford Hotel in Surry Hills. And it was run by Movember and Triple M. And it was based basically on a concept around a TV series that was released last year called the same name, Man Up. And it was by radio and TV personality Gus Warland. And he worked alongside this title, the proverbial bloke whisperer, Tom Harkin. And look, you know what it was about? The TV series itself was about when Gus lost his best mate when he committed suicide and it was his mission to get blokes talking about their problems. And this event, like I was really scared to go there because I thought, is this going to be four blokes in a room? You know, like is this going to be really confronting?
But okay, right.
There was 250...
I didn't know where you were going to go there because obviously you're someone who's quite open and communicative and I just wasn't sure where
you were going to... To an extent, right? But there was 250 blokes there, all types of blokes. And this, when this event kicked off, it was deep and intense and the chats and the lives that you saw was quite amazing. And one of the things that I really wanted to share with everyone was this idea of... They talked about this idea of holding the line. And as a guy, often we tend to talk about the first question and we never ask the second and third question, which is where you start to delve into
deeper of each subject. Other.
Yeah, and you get starting to get to a deeper level of communication. So I think just to round this off, what I wanted to say to people is I'm at this point in my career now where I've got some pretty big things happening. I've just bought a house, you know, I've got a baby on the way, and I've also got work plus what I do as an artist. So when things get tough and other things come into your life, how do you hold the line and ensure that you're continuing to delve that little bit deeper and make sure that you're asking the right questions of what you love to do and where your career is going and what your art's about? And that's what this podcast's about, isn't it? Holding the line.
Fantastic, yeah.
Well, this has been a crazy, crazy intro to the podcast.
It has. Lining us up for a professional, non-crazy, thought-provoking interview.
Great. So let's get our professional straight faces on, Lauren
Thought-provoking
Bailey.
Thought-provoking faces.
So please enjoy the sounds of our interview with the award-winning actress, screenwriter, director, playwright and arts executive, Sally McLean.
Lovely to have you here today with us, Sally.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
It's great to have you. And I mean, the first thing we always do with our guests is get them to read their story. So please, over to you.
Okay. I think that storytelling is intrinsic to the human condition. As a species, the act of telling our stories defines us, our societies, and therefore our world. As practicing artists, I think we hold a great responsibility to put out into the world what we'd like to see in the world. We have a great capacity to influence those around us, be that through music, dance, theatre, visual arts, or film, and it's something not to be taken for granted by us or our audiences. What we do is intangible in one sense, yet we're in a unique position to hold the mirror up to nature, as Shakespeare put it, and reflect back to ourselves and the world at large what is working, what isn't, and even maybe to suggest why and how we can change things. I became an artist to communicate with others, to share that conversation with the world, to look back to the past, observe and comment on the present, and look to the future, to ask questions and keep exploring solutions, and that's what drives me. If I can do all of that at once, then bonus. As an actor, writer, and director, the experiment, and it is an experiment, continues. It can be fun, exhausting, inspiring, and challenging all at once, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Wow.
So much
and
to talk
about. And that brings
us
to the end of the interview.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, guys.
Obviously, we read the story when you send it through to us, but to hear you speak that in your own way, that is just beautiful and quite inspiring. So thank you. Now, we did quite a bit of research for today's interview, so watch out.
Oh, God.
Almost more than we've done on anyone else because there is so much there, isn't it?
I was like, oh, Nick.
And I think the other thing...
That sounds wrong. I should qualify that. Like, there was just so much amazing stuff. And obviously, we've only got a short time with you, so it is finding a particular way into the plethora of work that you've done. And we were both a bit awestruck by the sheer breadth of the work you've been involved in and attached to. You've skillfully navigated many different disciplines and roles in the pursuit of storytelling, from your work as creative director of Incognita Enterprises,
correct. Yes.
Developing amazing works such as Shakespeare Republic web series, seasons 1 and 2, and soon to be 3, to your broad and consistent range of work as an Australian actress in shows such as The Flying Doctors and Jack Irish, and through to your newly acquired role as general manager. Can I announce this?
Yes, you can.
Well, it's in your signature, so yeah. To your newly acquired role as General Manager of Melbourne Web Fest, a celebration of Australia's biggest international web series. Okay, now that was my question set up, so here we go. None of this, I'm sure, has come purely through luck. It takes hard work, dedication and motivation. So from all of that work, you know, is there a particular moment in your life that you can look back and go, that's where it came from, all of this this amazing stuff you've achieved that seems quite, although it's creative, quite disparate in a lot of ways? Is there something that you can see the birth of it in that moment?
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. Yeah. It is quite disparate. Okay, one moment. I think, look, in anyone's life, it's a series of moments, but... if I was to go back, my primary thing has always been being an actor. And that continues to be it, even though I do everything else.
Yeah.
Do all the things, but the acting is what drives all of it. It's the reason that I created Shakespeare Republic was to also create my own work.
Yeah.
With most of the other stuff that I've done as well, it's the same idea. But it's also because I discovered that being able to create the roles to say what I wanted to say gave me that extra level of satisfaction.
Yeah.
But the kernel of me suddenly announcing I wanted to be an actor, and I know it clear as day, I can still remember it. I was 4 years old, I was at my grandparents in Seaford, and I was lying flat on the floor looking out. My grandparents had floor-to-ceiling windows in their lounge room with the curtain over the top of my head just so my head was peeping out at the bottom level of
Radio.
The curtain, watching Homicide, which was the name of a show that used to be on at the time, filming.
We're not that young.
No. Yeah, filming in my grandparents' front yard. So that was and it was, they actually had a property attached to theirs in Seaford that was owned by the council. You couldn't build on it because it kept flooding every wet season, so every winter. So they were given the job of maintaining it, which meant it's like almost like a park was attached to their house. And so Homicide was shooting this whole thing all day of a runaway stolen car that had gone down this hill and ended up in this park, and there were police running around and cameras and crew. And I just lay there transfixed on the floor watching this all day, which for me as a hyperactive four-year-old was extremely
extraordinary.
It was a massive effort.
Yeah, it was crazy. And at the end of the day, apparently, I don't actually remember this.
And amazing that you didn't grow up to be just someone who steals cars.
Yeah.
It was funny because apparently I walked around the house announcing that I was going to either be an actor or a policeman. And the actor won out.
Yeah, clearly. The actor won out. That's
amazing.
It's amazing how those moments affect us, isn't it?
Wow.
Like, I remember the moment that I became an actor too with Machismo, and I've spoken about it a bit
in
the podcast before. At those moments, they become like heroes, don't they? Like, it's as a child, when you see those things, you're like, wow, this seems like such an amazing thing to be a part of, and that sticks with you.
Oh, it really does. Yeah. And on top of that, one of my grandmother's good friends was Tommy Hanlon Jr., who was an American performer who came over here and was quite huge in Australia for quite a long time. And so Uncle Tommy used to come over to the house. I love it. It's weird because I thought this was normal. Like, I actually didn't realise other kids didn't have this. This is quite normal to have Uncle Tommy, who was on the television, to come around to have, you know, dinner at the house with Auntie Murphy, his wife. You know, it was kind of weird that when I grew up and realised that isn't normal.
No,
but having his influence too, and he was a lovely man. And he obviously, my grandmother had said to him, Sally's a little obsessed now with performance. And I remember he owned Ringland Brothers Circus at the time.
Yeah.
And so I remember being, and that was the other thing that was cool, is he said, oh, come to the circus, that's cool, and you can hang out with us backstage. And so I also, the next moment, was sitting on the dressing table in Uncle Tommy's dressing room, and he used to do clowning as well as the ringmaster, and watching him transform from this shy, lovely, gentle man into this clown who was out there and funny, and I watched him put the makeup on, and he changed as he put the makeup on, and my next thought was, oh, if you act, you can be someone different.
Amazing. Yeah.
And that was it. The deal was sealed. I was about six by that stage. So, I was done. I was an actor. That was what I was going
to
be.
And so from there, you went to a point where you went, rightio, to create my own work, I have to now produce. I have to now write.
Which presumably didn't happen at, 8 years old. That's like
It didn't happen at 8. I joined the youth theatre company at 10, and then I think I was 15 when I penned my first script, just as an experiment to see if I could. And sadly, that script no longer exists.
Oh.
I gave it to a friend at school for safekeeping, stupidly. I don't know what I was thinking. Anyway, I don't know. I heard somewhere that you shouldn't keep them. I don't know what it was. Anyway, handed it over.
Yeah.
And his mother proceeded to use it as kindling for the winter in their fireplace.
Well, it served a purpose anyway, didn't it?
It did serve a purpose. So my very first script does no longer exist.
It kept people warm, can say.
Which good storytelling should.
That's right.
So, but no, it wasn't until...
Unless it's summer.
Unless it's summer, in which case, I know. Oh, man. Anyway, so that was kind of sad. And I don't even really remember what it was about either, which is sad.
That is sad.
Yeah, I'm like, I'd like to have seen that. But it wasn't until I actually left drama school that I started writing. So that was graduating from drama school in London, and we had actually been taught through drama school to create our own work. They just kept saying, you've got to look at this. You can't not do this because the phone will not magically start ringing the minute you graduate. So work out how to get your own work out there.
Where did you study?
I studied at the Actors Institute in London, and that was it's jumping a few years. But, I had originally flown out there to audition for RADA. I'd been given an audition for RADA. And I was so excited, and I thought, I'm going to go on the plane, I'm going to go do the audition, it's going to be an awesome experience. And, of course, I got laryngitis on the plane.
Oh, on the plane.
On the plane. I think I had a cold getting on the plane, and then the closed-circuit air conditioning, and oh, my goodness. So I still went to the audition with no voice, trying to do Shakespeare.
Good on you.
Bless them. And they just went, Sally, okay, can you just stop? We actually can't hear you. Australia, and I really want to have it. No, we just really can't hear you. I know, character choice.
That's what place cards are for, surely. You just hold them up.
Damn, I should have thought of that at the time. Anyway, and then they said, look, we'll hold your place.
That's what they have phone a friend for.
That's exactly phone a friend. That's it. Yeah. See, all these things I should have thought of. But that's when they said, look, we'll hold the audition place for you for next year. And I'm thinking, I've just flown out from Australia oh my goodness, it's in a year away. So I ended up staying in London in the end and just thought I'll stay here for a bit, and because I had a visa, I could do that. And that's when I ended up deciding, actually, I'll give the drama school thing a miss for a bit, and I went to work for the BBC instead in production. Because that's what you do.
Yeah, because
didn't that turn out well?
Yeah, but that's what I guess these are the things in life that happen that sort of change the way that you approach things.
Totally.
I'm sure that your work at the BBC now, you kind of look back on and go, that was totally worth it for everything that I do now.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And to be honest, I loved working at the BBC. I ended up there for nearly 3 years and I just... And that was actually either side of drama school as well. So I loved working there because it was the first time I got to work in a large production base in a, for a broadcaster. I had an amazing boss, Rolly Keating, who's still a good friend today. And he was executive producer of our unit, and I was his personal assistant. That's where I ended up. I mean, I started temping with them, and that's sort of in the temp pool. I ended up with him, and then I was ended up going full time. And it was all factual programming, so it was the Bookmark documentary series, which is all about authors. So I loved reading, so that was great because I got to read every single book, and we get sent all the first proofs from all the publishers. Oh, no. So I was in heaven. I get to read everything that was coming out. And we also did One Foot in the Past, which was about architectural history in England. And we also did Bard on the Box, which was a Shakespeare series for an anniversary of Shakespeare. Yeah. Poetry Nation, there's a whole stack, but it was arts documentary making. Yeah. So that was amazing. And the most extraordinary team of directors and producers that I got to work with and assist and do research with. Sharon Maguire, who went on to direct Bridget Jones' Diary, was in our unit and just an amazing director, an amazing human. Many of them are still working. Damon Hunt is now directing and television for British Television and Drama. I mean, they're all doing this amazing stuff. So it was a very creative time and it was sudden realisation that there's a lot of creativity behind the camera as much as
as
in front
as
of
in front of it,
And so then finally I went, oh, yeah, I came here to do drama school, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
And Rolly said to me, aren't you meant to be an actress?
Good.
Do you need to look at that? And I went, oh, maybe. And then I did a play actually that year and he came, the first year, and he came and saw it and bless him, he took me aside and he said, you definitely need to be auditioning for drama school.
Which is either a compliment or not a compliment,
or
depending on
done
how
it.
You...
Yeah.
Okay, so I took it as a compliment. I don't know.
Well done.
Maybe I... Anyway...
Huffle.
So that's how I ended up. That's how I ended up going to drama school. Finally, auditioning for the. It was a postgraduate course at the Actors Institute, and it, to be honest, that was probably the best move again that I could have made because of the way that course was structured.
Did you come home after that?
No, I graduated, and then I went. Okay, well, they've said make your own work, so I'm going to make my first film because why not? I've got my contacts at the Beeb.
Why not? Indeed.
Yeah, let's just do it. Who's got a camera? I actually can probably tell this story now because it's many years later. We shot on DV and we were actually, we think, we haven't had it challenged, that we were the first drama to shoot on mini DV, as it was at the time, in England. And that was at Rolly's insistence, actually, because we were trying to get film stock and Rolly said, but digital's the future. Why don't you use DV? Because that's
so
the future.
So you are the future. Hang on. Moving on. You mentioned in your story...
Yes.
The importance, as an artist, of communicating with others, sharing that conversation with the world, and continuing to ask questions and explore solutions. Right now, if you could have your most important question answered as an artist or as a human being, what would it be?
Ooh.
It's a huge question.
Gosh, that's
and
massive.
And we always like to hit you with the big questions.
Nick wrote this question, so
yeah,
I am blameless.
Yeah.
Wow, that I would most... Oh, my goodness, I have so many questions.
Yeah. Is there one that keeps popping up in your work?
Yeah, or the most exciting.
Okay, well,
one to you.
The biggest... If you look at it from the work perspective, will human beings ever learn?
It's a very strong question and a very valid question.
Yeah, yeah, I have to say, because lots of my most of my work is set in the historical realm of pulling the stories from that period and looking at them through a modern lens.
And that's probably a wonderful segue to what we wanted to speak about next, which is your work with the Australian-made web series Shakespeare Republic. You created it with your production house, Incognita Enterprises, and it's enjoyed great success, really. If you go into, into your website, there is more wreaths on that website than you would care to look at it. I don't.
Take some out already.
You have to keep scrolling.
I know, it's like put up all the laurels. Yeah. Just put them all up.
So many, and so the success has been great. And I think now you've completed season two, and it's worth mentioning some of your cast too. The cast is quite amazing. You've got some wonderful Australian talent: Michaela Bannis, Alan Fletcher, Nadine Garner. So many great, talented people. I mean, talking of awards. recently, and why we actually reconnected was around the fact that you had just won an award, a major US award, which was the Cine Golden Eagle Award for Independent and Emerging Media, as well as the Best Digital Series at that very same event.
Yeah, well, it is actually the Best Digital Series Award in the Cine Golden Eagle Awards. So Cine, they're really interesting. They've been around, It's the 60th year this year.
Yeah, right.
And they were originally created by the department, Homeland Department, whatever department it's called in America that deals with publicity and promotion of America. They were part of the propaganda machine during the Cold War.
Yeah, right.
Which is really interesting. That's how they're the very early beginnings of it. So basically what Cine would do is look at all the American films that came out that year and choose the ones that went to Cannes, Berlin, Venice and other such places to represent the country.
Wow.
Anyway, Cold War ends and Cine goes, oh, well, that's kind of probably our job done then. But because they were so invested by that stage in the creativity of filmmakers in the US and they'd seen so much of the content, they decided what they'd do is become an awards event for American filmmakers. Wow. So they did that for the next 30-odd years, probably longer. And then I think it was in, and I need to get this, Betsy, who is the CEO, will be very upset with me if I get this wrong, but I think it was in the early 2000s, they decided to make it global. And so what's interesting about them is because of the way they operated once they became an awards thing, it means that the alumni for the Cine Awards are people like Steven Spielberg and Ron Howard.
And Sally McLean.
Yeah. Did we mention that?
Yeah. Drop that in there.
Yeah, you know, but it's really interesting. So it's this incredible who's who of current Hollywood who had their short films or their first projects put up there and awarded. And so, it's kind of a bit overwhelming when we got the notification. I actually had to email back and go, did you get this?
Yeah. Are you sure?
Just checking.
Just making sure I'm reading this correctly.
These are like, for anyone that has seen Shakespeare Republic, they're amazing little pieces, aren't they? I mean, let's explain it for the audience in case they haven't seen it. So the primary focus of the web series is to challenge the concept of traditional Shakespeare and engage new audiences with Shakespeare's work through bite-sized pieces of text and reduce the anxiety that many people feel in attending a full Shakespeare play, which I completely understand. Mm-hmm. Based on that premise, I mean, there's a heap that we can still learn from Shakespeare, right, that he has to offer us. What does the format in which you've developed for this, how does it help us digest the text and the ideas and themes?
Well, one of the first barriers, I think, that we have with Shakespeare is the language, clearly. Because it's a foreign language. We don't speak like that anymore, generally.
Yep.
So, that's something, and we do everything performed as written, so we don't. We may edit the text, and that's just done for length, which I'm always leery of doing, but, you know, at the same time, with web series particularly, you can't really go longer than 10 minutes. Mm. And with something like Shakespeare, you're going to have people tuning out. As it is, the longest episode we shot was season 2, which was Christopher Kirby's episode. It was because it was so strong a piece, we get away with 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And we even edited Chris's slightly too, because that's a very long speech.
Yeah, yeah.
We kind of go, okay, it's a given, that's going to be an issue, that's fine. So how do we therefore make that more palatable without changing the text? Okay, well then we set it in modern circumstances and we put it in modern context for today's audiences in a way that they'll relate.
Yeah.
So first season was all about making sure that we had modern technology, that we had archetype characters that people could relate to. One of the popular ones out of that season was Michaela Banniss's Phoebe from As You Like, she was hilarious. But that was Phoebe is an entitled girl, and we in the content. I mean, I don't want to give away spoilers, but it's that thing of she's at a party, she's drunk, she thinks Ganymede is cute, he's not there, but she doesn't really like him, and then she ends up drunk texting him. I mean, that's how we took Shakespeare's work and put it into the present, which people absolutely loved that episode. And Michaela is just classic, and you'll have to watch it, guys, because the way she sends the drunk text is hilarious. I have to say, it made me laugh a lot. When we were filming it. But it's that thing of making it relatable for today's audience. So putting everybody into context. Alan Fletcher doing the Scottish play. We had him playing, that was really weird actually in season one, him playing a person in a political party who was planning to take down his leader.
And then we had Billy Smedley do Hamlet, where he played a media advisor to a prime minister. And literally, after we released, I think we released Fletcher's, and then Bill's was number three, 2 days after that, Tony Abbott got ousted by Malcolm Turnbull.
Oh. You can't write this stuff, can you? No, or you can write it, apparently.
You can clearly write it. It was hilarious. We were tweeting out, well, good to know the Liberal Party have been watching Shakespeare Republic.
Fantastic.
So we did what we could.
We did what we could, Australia. Yeah, it was hilarious. It was really funny because, of course, we actually referenced Abbott in Hamlet's speech. Yeah. So, could we get any more blatant with what we were trying to say? And then, lo and behold, that happened 2 days later. So,
inside knowledge, maybe. I don't know.
We picked it up in the ether somehow.
And so, of course, your passion for the importance of telling stories in this format and via the web series effect, the web effect. It's something that is just picking up pace globally and definitely here in Australia, and people are becoming increasingly aware of it.
Yeah.
So you're right in the thick of things with web series. You've got all these laurels on your website. You are kicking ass in the web series field. And Melbourne Web Fest come along and they're like, you know what, we want you as our general manager. Can you talk to us about how that came about, what your role entails, and the impact that you're hoping to have both on the festival and through the festival in the broader entertainment market?
Ooh,
another big question.
Good question. Mm. Okay. We are an alumni of Melbourne Web Fest as Shakespeare Republic. So season one was selected for the Spotlight selection in last year. Uh-huh. And this year we were in official selection and nominated for Best Australian Drama. So that was very cool. We were very excited. So I've got a special place in my heart for Melbourne Web Fest anyway, because they were the first web festival to accept Shakespeare Republic season one. Uh-huh. And we'd had a bit of a problem on the circuit because we had people at the time saying, you're not a web series, you're just a selection of short films that are themed. And we were like, but no, it's a series and it's on the web. Yeah, how is that not a web series? Yeah. I'm grateful to say that has not been the case this year, which is a good thing because there's been more anthology series coming out. Yeah, so they've suddenly gone, oh, it's a thing. It's like, yeah, it's a thing. Okay, we're glad everyone's now on the page there. But it's okay. I mean, this is the thing. It's still a developing medium. So people are still trying to work out what web series are. And it is broadening in its definition as time goes on. So anyway, as a result of having a very good relationship with Melbourne Web Fest, obviously being our hometown festival as well, I knew all the crew from being involved as a creator for 2 years, and Steiner just rang me up one day and said, do you want to have a coffee? And I went, yeah, sure, thinking it was just going to catch up and chit-chat, and he literally over coffee just went, so we're down a board member and we'd all like you to take the position.
Wow, that's a big thing to drop over a coffee, isn't it?
I know, they're pretty good like that. I'm going to say the team are like, we want to do that, so let's just go do it. Okay, so
just put your cup down.
Put your cup down, that's it, don't. Because it was that moment of me saying, I'm sorry, say that again. Yeah. What do you want me to do? And he said, and the general manager role would be the role, and I...
It's a massive role.
It's huge.
And I guess the question that we both sort of sat down and went, okay, is how do you want to affect that festival? Like what's your ideal? And I know it's a big question. You might not have worked through it yet. I totally get it.
I haven't. I've been in the job for 2.5 months, so I'm still working it out.
totally, I get that. But like, okay, in a year or two, what would be the ideal picture for Melbourne Web Fest?
This is an interesting situation for me because I'm a creator.
Yeah.
And now I'm also involved in a festival. So that was one of the only reason I had to actually stop and think before just saying yes straight out.
Yep.
Because I did have to say to Steiner, I'm still going to be creating.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I can't be in Melbourne Web Fest anymore because I'm on the board. But it's the chance to be involved. I mean, Web Fest's been around now for 5 years. We're getting to our sixth. It was the fourth festival of its kind in the world. So it's been around a while and it's very well established and it's very well regarded.
Mm.
It's an excellent festival. What do I want to do? I guess I just want to support as much as I can the local creators here. I think Australia is just kicking goals like you would not believe internationally. It's extraordinary in the web series world. Mm. And we can say this because it's been announced and Luke Eve has been given the award, but they have something called the Web Series World Cup, which I love.
Yeah,
this was started 3 years ago, I think, by One of the guys involved in Marseille Webfest, I believe. Oh, gosh, I hope I get that right. It could be Web V Guide. Anyway, I'm terrible. I'm not good on the facts there. It's one of the guys that's close to Melbourne
Webfest. We've got both of those recorded now, so we'll just cut the other one out.
We'll just double-check which one's which. But it was started as a way for everyone to have the stats available to see what web series genres were doing well and what festivals were selecting. And it was just done to get an overview. And, of course, now because creators being artists, being the kind of people that we are, we're like, oh, you mean there's a ladder and, like, a table thing? And we get to know if we're, like, doing okay.
The best.
So the best, thank you. So everybody started paying attention to it, which was quite funny. And so this year, basically what they started doing, I think it was last year they started doing it, they started awarding the web series that got the most official selections, nominations and awards on the festival circuit.
Yeah.
Out of, I think, it's a certain amount of festivals around the world that are counted towards this tally.
Yeah.
And so Luke Eve, who directed High Life, which has been blitzing around the circuit, has actually been awarded as the top web series in the world this year.
Wow.
And
I didn't even know that was a thing. That's amazing.
I know. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah. So Luke's been given... Luke and High Life have got the award, and we've got Bruce, which is another Australian web series, a comedy, which Warwick Holt was a co-creator of, who's a good friend of the Republic, who's been running around accepting awards for us and things on the circuit. Excellent. When we couldn't be there.
Best job in
good
the world.
Good work, Warwick.
He's been collecting his own
Someone's
awards.
Someone's got to do it.
I know. Well, he's been getting his own awards for Bruce. That's been huge.
Oh, of course.
Yes, yep. Bruce, the web series. Yep. But Bruce is in the running to be second position. Wow. They're third position at the moment, but we've got a couple more festivals to go, and I'm quite sure they're going to win awards, and so they'll jump up the ranks, and so it looks like they may knock second position out of place and take the place.
It's like the tennis world tour, isn't it? You've got the rankings.
Really, it's crazy. Yeah. And then you've got Wizards of Oz are still out there kicking goals with their series, and they're in, if you go in just the Australian series in the top 20, they're at number 14, I think, and then Shakespeare Republic sits there at number 15. So
where do we go to find this out? Just as a do you know the website
or is it secret?
No, it's publicly available. They've actually got a Facebook page where they publish the results, but I think it's wswc.world is the website where you find the rankings.
Awesome.
And it literally is just the rankings. It's just got the names of the sites and the tallies and their logo on the top. And
it's really exciting.
They update it after every festival.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite extraordinary. So we're in the top... We always like to say this. We're in the top five Australian web series in the world.
That's amazing.
Fantastic. You should be saying that.
Yeah. No, it's quite extraordinary. And I think at number five, we've got Restoration is in the... He's there at number 20. It's quite extraordinary for such a small country to be doing so well out there.
We'll be back with the interview shortly. Artist Toolkit time, ladies and gentlemen. We'll take a short break from your usual podcast to do a fun little toolkit moment. This one is called One Word Wonders. So we know a picture can tell 1,000 words, but can one word tell 1,000 pictures, Lauren Bailey?
Oh, my goodness.
Who wrote this copy? Look, the long and short of it is this. Each of us will have 5 questions to shoot at the other person in quick succession. Shoot. And the idea being that the person who has been asked the question must reply with one word as the answer. Hopefully revealing quite a bit.
Okay, am I going first? I get to ask a question first. Okay, on your marks.
Get set.
Get set. Yep. Go. One strength of yours as an actor.
Impulse.
One weakness of yours as an actor.
Confidence.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Your brand in one word.
This is not my brand, but I just wanted to go, Actually, I'm sticking with that. Next question.
Oh, my God. Word you dislike to hear most as feedback for a show?
Nice.
And one quality you think is essential for good storytelling?
Humanity.
No.
Did I get correct answers?
Oh, yeah. Well, correct. What's correct? I don't know.
I can't believe I said for my brand, I'm not sure that's my brand.
I haven't asked you about the comedy, how you went with the comedy this month. Maybe that is your brand. Okay, we'll talk more about that. Okay, I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
This is your time to shine, Lauren Bailey.
I've never been readier.
Okay, here we go. First question.
Blue.
Incorrect. Describe in one word the way you feel about your creative output right now?
Great.
Oh, good. What made the difference between...
I got to be more...
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest describing word, but I'll give you that.
Okay, no, hang on. Don't
no,
get
no,
shot.
No, you don't get a second shot.
Really great, that's two words.
Really great, that's two words. Okay, moving on. What made the difference between your greatest day on set and your worst?
Oh, hang on. Connection.
I was going to go with coffee, but that's fine. How many times over 33 podcasts have you wanted to punch your co-host in the nose?
Never.
Yeah, that is a lie, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, next question. What is the secret to affecting someone to change their actions?
Love.
Great answer. Final question. You ready for this? Are we... This is a bit of a closed question, by the way, but I'll deliver it anyway. Are we going to ever see a book written by Lauren Bailey?
Well, I was actually thinking last night...
That's not one word.
Hey, we should write a book. That could be a good way to make money to support the podcast.
Just to clarify. Yes or no, I think, is...
Maybe.
Sitting on the fence. I was about to
anything
say...
Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. That is more... That's three words, but I'll take it as an answer. I thought you were going to get a scoop here, ladies and gentlemen, but not today.
A book. I mean, a book, that's locking me into a format, right?
Sure, you don't want to be locked in. That has been One Word Wonders. Back to the interview. You've got the general manager role now.
Yes.
You've got the creator role. You've got the producer role, the playwright. We talk about this a lot on the podcast as well, this idea of the different... mental gymnastics that you must play to fit into each of these roles.
Oh yeah.
Have any tips, tidbits?
Well, who cares about our listeners? It's really just advice for Nick and I.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Why we started it.
Yeah. Yep. And that's perfectly fine and very valid. And I'm happy to support that.
Sorry, listeners, we love you, but this one is for us.
Yeah, look, I'm not great at compartmentalising, which I've got other colleagues that do that very well, where they can jump from one to the other without too much drama. I tend to have to be all the hats on at once.
Yeah.
And then just keep switching very quickly between one and the next.
Yeah.
Do I do that successfully all the time? Not necessarily. So what would be my tips? I would suggest you've just got to love it. It's got to be the thing that gets you out of bed in the morning. And if it doesn't... that's okay. You don't have to do it. But if it gets you, if that's what wakes you up and gets you moving, then that's what you're meant to be doing, and go and do it. Tips. If you can get help in the process, do it.
Good. That's a great tip.
Seriously, because, we're all only human and there's only so much the brain can take.
Yeah.
You know, the usual thing is get enough sleep, try and eat properly, try and stay hydrated, all of that stuff. Because, look, I love it when we're in... usually the craziest time for me is when we're in pre-production to go into filming. Filming is always crazy, but the good thing is it's, I just have to wear director and actor hat usually, because I do have others around that take producer roles.
Mm. Yeah.
I still have to make the occasional producer decision, but generally I'm allowed to just get on and do the purely creative side. But pre-production, I'm swapping director hat for actor hat for producer hat for writer hat.
So just going digging a bit, because this is something that I'm a workshop daily. You get up, you've got something you're writing, something you're producing, something you want to act in, something you want to promote, a podcast that you want to be able to move forward with somehow. And they're all really valid, really rewarding things that you want to do. You know how they're like, pick the thing you want to do most and do that. It's like, I want to do them all. But when push comes to shove and you've tried to micromanage and get everything done and you have to let something go, how do you make the choice of what to let go and what to prioritise?
And this is where my reputation for not sleeping comes into
the mix. Yeah.
Okay, what do you do? Well, ultimately, it does come to... the decision that I put everything up against, the way I make the decision, is to look at it and go, who is relying on me to get this done by this time?
And out of those people, which one do I like the most? That's what I do. That is totally
which,
what I do.
Sally, is why I'm always last. Never hear from Lauren.
Shh, Lauren, you're not supposed to give that secret away. No, it actually does cut, because I've been quite lucky. Usually there is at least a little bit of leeway between deadlines. So it really will come down to, I may want to really go and play with that script a bit more, but if that's just for myself because nobody else is on that project, it has to go into the to-do later box. Yeah. And I have to look at it and go, no, my sound engineer or my sound editor needs this decided on by now, and I need to have done the prep work for that now, and I just have to do that. So it is, I think the trick is to try and prioritise it, because by giving yourself deadlines that are rolling to a degree, so that you're not, everything's not due at once.
Yeah,
that really is the trick. Yeah. But you need to be able to go, okay, I have to do X, Y, and Z in total by this date. So how do I roll that back and go, okay, so by this date this has to be done, by this date this has to be done. So you give yourself some breathing space.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice, is to have a look. Always start with the end date. So in our case, particularly for production, like we start shooting on this day and then working it back from there as to, okay, so this has to be done by then, this has to be done by then, and then lining it up. Yeah, and that's I think how you best manage. Now, I say that and doesn't always go to plan way. But hence the reputation for not sleeping.
Okay, so in an ideal world, at least, you know, knowing how to achieve success as closely as possible and working
great project
that.
Management skills by the sound of it. A really good Gantt chart by the sound of it.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I'm terrible at making lists and doing charts. I'm like, whatever, I just keep it all in my head, which is not great either, because then if you get people to come in and help you,
but if you
they're
have the
not
capacity.
In your head. That's well, like, true, but they're not in your head. No, they can't read your mind. So, yeah, I've got to get better at that side, definitely.
And I think speaking about the people around you and the people that have helped you over the years, your online signature indicates that through Incognita Enterprises, you enjoyed an honourable patronage from Sir Nigel Hawthorne. Sir Hawthorne has now passed, but up until his passing in 2001, he influenced the company and yourself quite radically by the sounds of things. Can you tell us a little bit? Because I think the patronage idea is not one I personally know a lot about, or I think the Australian industry knows a lot about. So couple of things here. Feel free to share a little bit about Sir Hawthorne. Also about how that's worked for you over the time that you ran Incognita Enterprises.
Okay. Well, it's Sir Nigel.
Sir Nigel?
Yes, you don't use their surname.
Oh, is it? Sorry, there you
no,
go.
No, don't apologise. I had to learn that as well.
Yeah, right.
That's why I'm quick to just correct it.
Yeah, yeah.
Only that's why I let you ask that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy because we're not used to dealing with sirs.
Yeah, that's
very
right.
Much
I did not know
here,
that.
So we don't know. Yeah, Sir Nigel. It's interesting. You call them by their first
name. Yeah, I would
name.
Have thought,
it's like
yeah.
Sir Ian for Sir Ian McKellen.
Yeah, oh, of
it's,
course.
It's really right. Interesting. That's why they. It's not. Yeah, people. It's the actual correct form of address.
Oh, Dame Judy.
Dame Judy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep, all that. Dame Maggie, all that stuff. Yeah. So, Nigel, well, what was interesting about that, when I mentioned earlier about going through drama school in London and being taught about creating your own work and coming out the other side of that and going, okay, let's do it, and sitting down to write my first film script, we got through the filming and we got to the end of that process, and I think we were in post-production, and I think one of the actors came to me and said, have you thought about getting some patronage from someone? And I went, what are you talking about? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, no, it's a thing, and proceeded to put an article in front of me about Dame Judi Dench becoming the patron for an independent theatre company that was in the area. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. So I proceeded to go, right, so what's my top 10 of people that I'd like to a patron for me? And look, I think the key to any of this is remembering people can only say no. So ask. Because if you don't ask, you'll never know. And so I had, you know, this list of actors on, and a couple of directors on my sheet of paper. And
this was in your early 20s?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I just sat down and I started writing letters, essentially, and I sent them off to everybody. And it was interesting because I think in England they get quite used to it because it's a thing, because of course it's from Shakespeare's time.
Yeah.
Ironically, Shakespeare and all those playwrights and all those companies all had patrons. That's how they survived. So it's basically a continuing thing. So I got a lot of people writing back, oh, look, it sounds lovely, but no, I'm not interested, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, okay, well, it was worth a go and whatever. We won't worry about it. And then I got this handwritten note. Funnily enough, the day I was leaving the country. So this is, oh man, it was a crazy time. So we filmed the film, we did the post-production. I got a note from Nigel, handwritten note, and it was when I'd just been told by the Home Office in London that they weren't going to extend my visa, and I had a month to leave the country. So I had a month to finish the film, release the film, and then get out of the country.
Wow.
Or I was going to be in trouble. Yeah. So I get this lovely note from Nigel saying, oh, I've been overseas filming Madeleine. And I didn't get to see your letter until now. I'm very interested in everything you have to say. Can I see a rough cut of the film? Wow. And I'm like, oh, my God. Okay, quick, somebody, back in the day, somebody get a VHS of the film or a DVD. It was too expensive to get a DVD at that point. Get a VHS. Anyway, we did it and we put it in the post and we sent it off to him. And we ended up finishing, didn't hear back because he'd gone on to another film. Did the thing. Released it at Ealing Studios, had the big thing, blah, blah, blah. And I literally got on a plane 2 days after the launch of the film and went, bye, England, and came home. And when I got home, and that's when I got a letter that had been forwarded on from where I'd been living in England from Nigel saying, I've seen the rough cut. I think it's a splendid piece. I'm very impressed. I know. Fantastic. I loved it. I remember that wording. Yeah. It's beautiful. I loved it. I'm more than happy to be your honorary patron. And I remember I was home on my own. No one else was home. And I'm like running around the house going, oh, my God. And there was no one there to tell. It was crazy. But, yeah, so that's how that happened. And so what was interesting about Nigel's and my relationship then for the next 4 years was that most of it was conducted by letter.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
So it was great because I'd write to him going, I've had the worst day. This sucks. And he'd write back, oh, I know what you're talking about. This is what happened to me. So he was amazing just for moral support but also for really good advice.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the man was also a producer on various projects, which a lot of people didn't know. Mm. But, yeah, and he was just an extraordinary human and I'm extremely grateful that he saw something in me and the work we were doing that he wanted to put his name to.
And that's a terrific lead into our last question for today, which is regarding the legacy of Sally McLean. If you... If you could be remembered, this is a bit past tense.
Yeah. I think it was the way you delivered it. That was...
If we're looking at shifting perceptions, if there was one thing that one day you will be remembered for, what would you like it to be?
That I did the best that I could, that I was honest in the way that I plied my craft, and that I left the world a little bit of a better place than when I found it.
That's beautiful. I feel like that was such an intense question to end with. What's your favourite colour?
That'd be red.
Red's a great colour.
It's a great colour. Sally, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for, you know, staying in touch because we have been corresponding for a couple of years now and it's so fantastic to get in a room and chat to you. And as I said, you're doing so many amazing things and it's so inspiring. Yeah. So,
and it was so exciting to hear from you after we first sort of became aware of the work that you guys were doing. So thank you so much for reaching out to us.
Oh, gosh. Thank you for inviting me in to play with you guys and have a chat. It's been awesome. And look, you know, I think this is the thing. As creatives, we all inspire each other. And I think you guys are doing an amazing job with this podcast and with your own careers and what you're doing. And so all I'm going to say is yay to all of us and let's all just keep moving forward and kicking goals and making things happen.
Yeah. Oh, and we probably should mention there's a crowdfunding campaign.
Oh, yes.
No. That actually finished. It's all good. That's done. And we got 146%. Thank you very much.
Oh, woo-hoo! Yes. Woo-hoo! What a way to end. Congrats, team.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it was good. It was very good. We leave for New York on Friday, so we're going to go get the award in person. So, and speaking Daggers, which is our first short film, which is yet to be released, has also been accepted into a North American film festival. So we're also flying to North Carolina to go and attend.
How is that?
I know, it's insane.
We're all sorted.
It's insane.
So, okay, yeah. I'm terminating this interview. I don't know where to begin.
I know where to begin. Can I begin?
I mean, I know where to begin. But that was amazing.
It really was.
My little brain is spinning off all over the shop.
Yeah, and you know, there's a couple of things that I took out from that interview. And the first one that I want to cover is a really simple point, but it's something I think we need to continue to remember and remind ourselves about, is that when Sally was talking about Sir Nigel Hawthorne, or Sir Nigel, the idea that she wrote to him...
Oh, love it. That's just what I was going to say.
Oh, really? I just love this idea that she said, it's okay. The worst people could do is say no. And I kind of forget that a lot of the time, you know. Like sometimes I'm not very good at having those discussions. There may be someone that I want to work with and I don't have that discussion because I'm A, worried that they don't want to work with me, B, you know, worried that they're going to say something that...
Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean.
The other thing of this is too, if you think about someone and if they asked you to work with them, you're not judging them or... Do you know what I mean? Like you might say no because you don't have time, but it's not a slight on the other person ever, I think.
And it's really funny if you think about it because when we go into an audition room, we practice through our whole careers to be comfortable with people saying no to us and us not taking that personally. So why should it be any different outside of an audition room?
Shouldn't. That's my take out. But there was this other thing that I think is worth bringing up and we don't often talk about this. One other thing, so many things. But one thing we don't often bring up in these takeouts is energetics. But I really feel after spending a bit of time with Sally, the moment she walked in the room, I felt like I'd known her for 20 years.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful energy that she brings, I believe, into every day. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it?
Everything she does, absolutely.
So having that ability and those energetics, that for me was really inspiring to spend some time with her.
And I think they're linked. And the reason, maybe the reason that we both picked that, the same takeaway is because I think that is fundamentally at the core of all the decisions she's made throughout the experiment, as she calls it, throughout her creative journey and minute to minute, is that idea of, well, people can only say no.
Yeah.
And we're all in this experimenting together. I'm going to take all of that into the month ahead, which is so funny because obviously I wrote my notes for what the month ahead would look like before we did this interview. But, you know, I'm about to finish the show that I'm in and the last 4 months have been rehearsing and shows for me, which has just been really joyful.
Joyful. And, yeah, you have exuded energetics that have been really positive. Yeah, they've been really positive. And I think that's that thing of being able to do the work, Lauren.
And I am in no way feeling like I'm like, oh, I want that to end.
Mm.
But in this idea that I was talking about earlier of just being really present in what's happening moment to moment, obviously the show is about to end and when that happens, then I'm going to have some space to turn my attention to the other things that I'm doing. And I'm going to take Sally's idea of they can only say no into that and see what comes of it.
Oh, isn't that exciting? Oh,
it's very exciting. What about you, Nick?
Well, the month ahead is a big one for me. I'm moving to Newcastle. I mean, you know, I've been in Sydney for such, well, 2-3 years now before being in Melbourne when we started
really
this podcast.
And just really getting settled, I would say.
Settled, yeah. But I think once again, this idea of like what we were talking about with Sally, it's okay to say no. I think there's a lot of creative partnerships that are to be forged in Newcastle for me as well. And having the guts and the...
Disruption.
Yeah, disruption and also the confidence to make those connections. So I think that's a really important thing that this month's going to hold is...
Yeah, there seems to be a really... The more people I speak to, the more I hear about things that are happening in Newcastle. And I went to the spa seminar a couple of months ago now and I met a guy there who works with a theatre company in Newcastle and I keep running into people. It just feels like it's a really... creative bubbling atmosphere there.
Yeah, and I think that is what I'm excited about this month. And that idea of, you know, there's so many things in my life. And someone said this to me the other day that I think is worth bringing up. I have talked on this podcast about occasionally feeling like, you know, not everything for me in my acting career is in flow or I feel like yourself, you know, you're working a lot. I'm not necessarily feeling that at the moment. And this particular person just said to me, you have different priorities in life at different times. And I've been going through a priority of a new house, a baby on the way with my beautiful partner. Those priorities are, if you scored them out of 10, they're at 10. So once those things are up and at 10, how can I then look at these other priorities in my life, which is my artistic career? And how can I bring the new beginning of Newcastle in a way? into that to help kickstart it and bring it up to a 10 like my personal life.
It's really exciting to hear, and it's so interesting because from the outside, the way we appear to other people, you are still, to me, Nick, my friend, actor, creative, husband, soon to be father, now home. You know, you're all of those things.
We play all those roles.
And when you become more of one, I don't see you as less of another, but how do we view ourselves like that from the inside?
I see it very differently internally, you know.
Yeah, which just makes sense, exactly.
But no, it's exciting time. So that's kind of my month ahead and what I'll be focusing on, which is big, really. It's a lot to deal with.
I think you've got, and you know, it's coming up to Christmas. I think you'll have plenty on your plate. I don't think you need to worry about that. I did see that you had a couple of recommendations there for things that are happening around town at the moment.
I do. I'll just go through them pretty quickly. These are all podcast alumni that have things coming up. And I think it's worth mentioning each one of these really quickly. One is Brent Logan, who was our heavy metal performer, artist, man about town, who is performing in his band Lethal Vendetta at Unleashed, a Night of Metal at the Bridge Hotel on the 17th of November.
That's in Sydney?
In Sydney. Yeah. In Rozelle, actually, where I'm currently based. So I'm
going
to be heading along to that.
Very nice of him.
Yeah. It's just down the road.
Just schedule it near me, mate.
He's like, it's in your home suburb. You better be there. The next one is Wasted by Kate Tempest by the wonderful Kings Collective.
Oh, they do some fantastic stuff.
Fantastic work. And we had Dave Harrison on one of our early Storyteller Snapshots, if you remember, Lauren.
I certainly do remember. He's an extremely talented, motivated individual.
He really is. And so that performance is on the 30th of November. And the final one is from Gabby Rose Carter and her wonderful Q44 Theatre. They're doing a Greek piece of theatre, an original work.
Oh, fantastic.
NK, a Kazantzakian montage, which I hope I said that correctly, Gabby. I apologise if I didn't, and to the Greek community. But that will be happening at the wonderful, intimate Q44 Theatre from the...
Such a great space.
Yeah, it's in Richmond, in Melbourne, and it'll be happening from the 13th to the 17th of November.
Fantastic. Well, it's great to be in this world where storytellers are doing great stuff and we get to talk to some of them about it. And if you loved what you heard when you listened to the podcast today or tonight or whenever it is for you or in the other months, want to hear anything in the months coming up, you know, you can tune into us on all the channels. All the channels, I'm just going to leave it there. You know what they are, all the places you can listen to podcasts through. You can find us at theactofstorytelling.com.au. I'm just swinging it here. What else is happening?
I was just leaving you hanging. It was fantastic to listen to. There's a few things you can do. Remember.
What else can we do, Nick?
Remember, get in touch with us too. theactofstorytelling@gmail.com. Write to us. We love hearing from you. We've had some wonderful people touch base with us recently.
Yeah, it's so wonderful to hear from our listeners. So you can download our voice map audio GPS tour.
Yep.
You can donate for as little as $1 a month on Patreon. Go on, do it. I dare you. And just donate $10 if you want, just as a one-off, and we'll give you one of Bethany's amazing bookmarks. I think that's everything.
That is pretty much everything. I think just all we want to say to you now is continue to join us on The Act of Storytelling.
We love having you listen, and we can't wait to talk to you again.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Earbuds, Melbourne's podcast network. Earbudsnetwork.com.